It might have been rushed and battered, but the finale of Owl House was still a hoot. I don't think there are actually any spoilers in this one, because we mainly get extremely distracted and talk about anime a bunch. But there's no time to lose. See what I did there? Lose. Let's get on with this magical isekai episode.
Welcome to In Media Les, a podcast about queer relationships in media. I'm Chloe.
And I'm Val.
And today we will be discussing the series finale of The Owl House, as well as doing a retrospective, I think, on the entire series and our thoughts on it. So it just wrapped up the final third part of the three-part pseudo final season slash finale. I just watched it like 2 hours ago, and I have thoughts.
I also have thoughts.
But first, actually, wait.
Okay.
We have a Discord. You should join it. It's just Val and me right now. So if you ever wanted to have a very awkward interaction with two podcast hosts, you're welcome to join. There'll be a link in the description. That's all I have to say. That was like 5 seconds. Bye. Okay.
Episode over.
You thought it was going to be Owl House? It's actually just a Discord plug. The end.
Okay. What are your thoughts?
Okay.
Because you said you had thoughts.
I do. And I don't want to sound like I'm down on it. I thought it was for the circumstances, it was a very good ending. I thought it was well done. I think it was satisfying. I just think the circumstances of not being able to really finish the show the way Dana Terrace envisioned it, I think really hurt it.
Yes.
It felt really rushed. Like, especially
I was exhausted by the end. I was like, right?
It's just whiplash. Ran a sprint. Oh my gosh. Like, and I felt so bad because, okay, like, the Collector is a very interesting villain, and there's not even a villain, an antagonist, I should say. And he just wants, you know, he's just a kid. He doesn't know any better. Mm-hmm. And there's supposed to be, you could totally tell that, like, there's probably was supposed to be a whole arc in a season about teaching him about, like, kindness and him not getting it and him learning about it and all this stuff. And, like, they had to distill it down into, like, 5 minutes. And it just didn't make sense to me.
It had so much in it. We thought that episode 2 had a lot in it.
Yeah.
episode 3 had like 4 episode 2s in it.
It even started so abruptly. Like, I couldn't even catch my breath. Like, that was the thing. It's just like, it just starts and it's just like, oh, they're all captured. Oh, they're all screwed. I mean, it's just suffering, man. It's suffering from the fact that they weren't given the time they needed to
because
finish
Disney executives
properly.
Don't care about the product.
Which is stupid, because I feel like if it were, you know, if things were fast forwarded a year, because Disney was being all weird about LGBT stuff up until they got into a big fight with Ronnie D, aka Ron DeSantis. I just call him Ronnie D in my head, because he doesn't deserve to be called by his name, because he's a bigot. But anyways, you know, he picked a fight with Disney, and now Disney is very, like, pro-LGBT stuff. And, like, I feel like if they had this whole falling out a year ago, Owl House would have gotten a full third season.
What could have been? Could have been? One of the first things I will say, though, is that it is a beautiful episode.
Yes.
Like, it is so pretty, so very, very pretty. Yes. And that I enjoyed a lot.
It was a beautiful episode. I thought the music was really good, actually. That was something I took, I actually jotted down. That there is, like, this kind of upbeat version of the theme song that plays at one point where Luce is, like, saving the day. And it's really beautiful.
Mm-hmm. It reminded me, so I have not watched Gravity Falls.
Okay. I have not either.
But I've been around enough people who have that I kind of know the theme song. And it's very, very similar. Which makes sense because the creator, Alex Hirsch,
yeah.
is the voice actor that plays King. And it seems that they work together with Dana Terrace. But, like, there is a lot of that vibe in there. And I wonder if I would have enjoyed this even more if I have watched Gravity Falls. That's just
interesting.
Something that I was thinking of when that, like, song came on and reminded me of this other cartoon. Because, actually, I was talking about it with my cousin, like, Owl House, maybe a month ago or so, after the second episode came out. And he was telling me how there's this whole theory that Ida is actually a character from Gravity Falls. You know Grunkle Stan? I feel like everyone kind of knows Grunkle Stan.
I've been around. I've seen the GIFs.
There's a whole thing where he was married in Vegas or something once. And then, Ida. Like, she stole his money or something. Like, it was a scam. And a lot of it hints to it being Ida, which makes so much sense.
There's some, like, metaverse for Owl House and Gravity Falls.
And Amphibia.
A cosmos.
Yes.
Populated by these young adult television shows.
Exactly. So that's just a thought that I was, like, thinking while watching. You know, would I have enjoyed this much, much more if I was way more invested in the world and the universe of this cartoon? Yeah. And I'm sure I would have. That's not to say I didn't enjoy this one.
Yeah.
I do have a lot of criticism for it, though.
Yes, same.
Like, a lot.
Why don't we start with the things... Well, we've been kind of listening to things we like, but is there anything else you like that we should talk about first before we get into the criticism?
I'm sure that if I re-listened to the first episode that we did on Owl House ever, I would have been just as surprised as I am right now. But I just realized that Basha, what's her name? Basha, the three-eyed one.
Yeah.
That Sam Riegel's sister voices her, Eden Riegel. How did I not know that? I don't know, but now I do, and it's exciting. And because I love that character, because she's mean, it makes it a million times better.
That's Val's favorite type of character.
Yeah, no one knew about it. It's a secret. Yeah, no one.
We've never talked about that before on the show. Okay, so
how about you?
I'm thinking through this third episode in particular, and like how it starts. It starts with Luce in this dream sequence where basically everyone's blaming her for everything that happened. And Ida and King are having similar dreams where basically, like, everyone they thought was their friend is blaming them for everything. I think King's is a little different, but it's, like, that idea. Like, they have no friends left. They are betrayed. They are at their lowest point. And to me, again, this didn't... I guess I was trying to do something about it, but I'm just going to go through that and say, like, what didn't work. Like... Again, it was so obvious what they were doing. And I feel like Luce already kind of confronted and dealt with that thought that she had screwed up by, you know, like helping Belos meet the Collector on accident.
Not only that, we had a whole arc right before that final confrontation with Belos before the Day of Unity happened, when she gets her little palisman egg she tries to take care of it, but it's like she's also having a breakdown the whole time, very quietly. We had that already, so it felt like a step back, and it didn't need to be in there because they had to fit everything else in.
Yeah, exactly. Like, I know what they will, I don't know, like, I guess it's to show the stakes, that the is to remind us of the Collector's powers, but it just fell flat to me at the beginning. It's just like, I feel like these people have dealt with this already. Like, Ida knows that her sister loves her, and Luce knows that her friends forgive her, or not even forgive her, don't hold her culpable for this, and, you know, King, King was the one who's still kind of, I think, having a bit of an identity crisis, which made sense to keep that up. So that one was the one I was okay with. And so, like, that was... And then, okay, you know, Luce wakes up. They're all reunited. There's a beautiful moment where they hug, and the Collector sees that, and, like, the Collector realizes how lonely he is. And again, this is fine. I just think everything's happening at like turbo speed.
Yeah.
And the collector comes and he's like, I'm going to play games with you. And they like try and show him their memories of like how things can be good without playing. I don't know. Wait, there are the parts where they play games.
That,
I forgot because
I was going to say that part was a montage and it felt like it was too quick for a montage.
Well, because, okay, there's like Pac-Man,
marbles,
Jenga,
and
marbles. Yeah. And again, it's just like, I get what they're trying to do here, but it's just, they clearly don't have enough time to do it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, this needed more time, and it I don't know, it just was too fast. This all feels like these were, like, individual episodes from some hypothetical full season that would have happened. Like, as I imagine this, I think through what this would be, and I feel like the dream world sequence would be its own episode, and the, like, playing the collector's game would be its own episode, mm-hmm. and then the, like, I don't know, like, retracing the steps and showing the collector how they, like, befriended each other. And
or
like,
even the collector's story.
Yeah, the collector's story being abandoned by his family. That's an episode. Like, there's so many things here where I was just like, okay, if they had more than 55 minutes or whatever it was to wrap this up, this would have been a full episode by itself.
I feel like, and it's 10 episodes in one. Yeah, you're so right. Yes, I didn't like know how to conceptualize it, but yes, that's exactly.
Yes, that's what's going on here. And it's so frustrating because I think if you had given it time to breathe, a lot of the emotional beats would have hit more. Mm-hmm. Because interspersed in this, we have Rain, who was a puppet possessed by Bellows, and they like basically try to like save the day and stop Bellows.
That was cool. I wanted like 30 minutes of that.
Right. Like, again, that would have been a whole episode of like Bellows and Rain trying to fight each other, and, you know, Rain slowly succumbing and failing to stop Bellows. Again, it's just like, I don't know, there's so much there and so much interesting stuff. And I feel like Bellows just totally, I don't know. I'm just going to make a bunch of sounds. I don't even know what to say about Bellows in this. Like,
it was
waste of a good villain.
It was weird that they chose to say that he was a hero in his own eyes.
Yeah.
Because that has never played that much of a part in it, just because of the way they framed him, even from his point of view.
Yeah.
We get a little bit of that in the episode where they go into his mind and he's like somewhat feeling guilty about it, but mostly not. Like, there's just like a drop of guilt. And then everything else is righteousness and the hunger for power.
Yeah.
So having them describe him as someone who sees himself as the hero in his eyes makes sense, like, conceptually, but not for this episode.
I completely agree.
I really did enjoy him turning back into his, like, pristine self.
I like that. Yeah. I liked it. And again, I wish we had more time with that. Because that's it. That's an interesting, I don't know. I mean, I know that's, like, cliche. It's, like,
I would actually argue that was one of the only moments where it felt the correct pacing to me.
Yeah, well,
just thinking about it, they wouldn't have been able to stretch this Bellows trying to act like he's reformed, because we had that several times. Like, I think season one and most of season two is us trying to understand the Emperor, and then the second half of season two is us trying to say, like, oh, what if he feels guilty over it? There's a whole episode where we go inside of him, right? And we actually learn that he is a very, very corrupt person and rotten from the inside out. Like, we already learned that, right? So it was really cool to see that moment of him being like a snake and a weasel. You know, no offense to those animals. They're pretty cool, but just
glad you didn't insult any of our snake or weasel listeners.
And I actually really liked that moment because it felt true to what they were trying to say about him. I did like the design that Luz had as like that like Titan form.
I wanted her to stay like that. I wish that was permanent. I don't know. It was such an upgrade.
Also, I thought that she was going to have those, like, streaks that went into her eyes as it dissipated. I thought those were going to remain. Because for Rain, we have the tear streaks. For Hunter, we have all the scarring. Like, every single character pretty much has left this series with so many physical changes that I legit thought she was going to have those, like, triple streaks from her eyes. That would have been so cool. But I don't mind they gave her a bunch of face scars.
Yeah.
But it would have been cool.
Yes. It would have been really cool. I don't know. I just like it when a character is marked at the end and, like, I don't know, transform. Like, that's the hero's journey, right? Anyway, I'm trying to think about... There's just so much that happens in that episode, but so quick.
Yeah.
Okay, so the collector... I mean, there's some stuff that's, like, the collector's power stops working. And I know there's, like, a narrative contrivance for why it is, so that he can't stop Bellows, but, like... I thought that was kind of a cheap cop-out. Like, oh, suddenly my powers don't work. Sorry, guys.
Well, actually, that logically worked for me because the Collector is said to have never been able to compete with the Titan's magic.
I know, but is it really the Titan's magic if it's Bellows? I don't know.
I would say that I did have, like, a gripe with that, but not from the point of view that you're seeing. For me, it was more so the fact that they made the Collector behave remorsefully way too early for me.
Yeah.
Because halfway through the episode, he's helping everyone, and that's no longer part of the conflict, right? Yeah. And it was such a big part of the conflict for an entire season where the plot picked up. It was all of season two, right? Because season one is mostly introducing us to this world. And then season two is when we actually, like, get into the meat of the story.
Yeah.
And the whole thing was that the Collector is this horrifying, terrifying presence that everyone wants to keep it contained. And then we find out it's, like, this kid who doesn't know how to behave. And I really needed that to stretch to at least the last third, the last quarter of the story. And the Collector understood... their mistake way too early.
Yeah. Okay, I'm going to even step back from that a bit, which is, I think in retrospect, as I was, you know, I watched this and then went for a walk, and as I was thinking about it on my walk, I fundamentally don't like the Collector as a character.
That's fair. I know that you said that in the last time we talked about it, and I think
before I was a little more, I was like, we'll see where they go with him. I don't remember exactly what I said, because the moment we record an episode, I forget everything I've ever said. I don't know, like, to me, I like to imagine this counterfactual universe where they get a full third season, or even beyond that, fourth and fifth. And I just have to question, like, why do we have to have this kind of super powerful, extra-dimensional being who no one else can compete with, aside from, I guess, Emperor Bellows in one circumstance when he's merged with a Titan? But, like, why can't this show just be about the zany witch apprentice adventures, and that the big threat maybe isn't something like world ending, but it's just like something personally significant? And I don't understand why everything has to end with like a world ending threat. I just don't think that an escalation was necessary, and I see why they had to do it again because of the shortened thing, but I just don't know. Like, to me, what made the show The Owl House fun really just got sapped out of these last three episodes.
Because it was all about, like, this weird, creepy, cool place. And, like, all the weird stuff that we experience through Luz, because she's the human in the scenario.
Right. And then in the, you know, like, the first episode, they spend most of that on Earth.
Mm-hmm.
Second episode is mostly King's adventures with the Collector, as well as, like, I don't know. There was some other stuff that I don't remember. It was like a setup. Yeah. And then the third episode is just like this buffless fight with, you know, Emperor Bellows. But Maybe that's part of my problem with it, is that, like, in the third episode, the sense of place that is the Boiling Isles, like, loses all meaning. It feels just like that was the Boiling Isles that had so much character. All of it is, like, gone. And I feel like that's really unfortunate, because that was what was one of the more interesting things about this. And so now it's just, like, empty. All the characters are turned to puppets. I don't know, it's just, like, it's frustrating. I guess this drives to my another frustration, which is that, aside from, like, the core main cast, we didn't get a lot of the supporting cast in the third season.
We had no time for them. Yeah.
Hootie did not. There was no Hootie at all in the finale. Like, yes, he came back or whatever, but, like, he didn't talk. There was zero Hootie.
Yeah.
He didn't. Like, what
maybe
the heck?
Alex Hirsch had, like, other projects.
The Owl House did not talk in the show called The Owl House in its final season. What the heck?
I completely agree with you. I'm so frustrated for the creators of the show. I'm so frustrated for them, because seeing this passion project, this really, really excellent show, which is in line with a lot of Disney cartoons. Like, yeah. It's not a revolutionary cartoon.
Not at all.
So the fact that they just, like, canceled it, and it was a really popular one. Like, it's mind-boggling. So I feel like we're experiencing a lot of that frustration secondhand. So I can't even imagine what they were feeling. Because, like, right. The saltiness is there. But also, I will say that I loved the last, like, what was it, 10 minutes or so? That like, the epilogue. It was very satisfying. Like, we felt the cast and the crew. At least I felt the cast and the crew in that last 10 minutes. We got to see all of them. We got to see a very pretty kind of, like, slideshow at the end with the credits.
Yeah.
I don't know. It felt like a proper goodbye, even though it should have been farther down the line. Like, it felt very cared for and emotionally charged. Like, I got goosebumps when they did the theme song, and instead of Luz and Ida and, like, how it always was, it was all of their friends instead. Like, that was so beautiful.
Yeah. I never really care too much about endings of like, cartoons that are geared towards a younger audience, because I feel like they're always the same.
Yeah.
I don't know. It's always just like, and they all lived happily ever after. And it's fine.
Yeah, but it was okay. There's no.
Yeah, I mean, the art was beautiful. Mm-hmm. And yeah, I want to be clear, going back to what you said, like, I don't blame anyone who worked on this show for how this ended. Like, I don't think this is not Game of Thrones, where clearly the creators just didn't care anymore. Like, this, you know, is a project
where they
passion.
Clearly cared a lot.
Yes, they clearly cared a lot about the show, and they did the best they could with the resources they were given. Mm-hmm. And I want to be clear, like, that's what I believe, and I don't want, this is not Game of Thrones where they deliberately sabotage their own show. Yeah, I just want to be clear about that. And I think, I don't know. I mean, it's fine. I would still recommend it.
Yeah.
But I was still kind of disappointed by the last season. And that's okay.
I think everyone was. Yeah.
Yeah. Not everything has to be end on a high note. You know, like, not every, you know, She-Ra did. Legend of Korra had its stumbles. Like, that second season had its ups and downs.
That was a rough one. Although, it was probably my favorite season just because of, like, the conflict. It kind of felt like a really, really cool idea, and we got to know Rava and Vatu and all, like, that Avatar backstory. Like, I actually really like the season. It just also was such a punching bag for the studios. Not the studio. What am I saying? For the executives.
Yeah. The Nickelodeon.
For the Nickelodeon.
Executives.
Also, did you know that Erica Lindbeck was in this? Do you know who that is?
I do not.
She's Mel's assistant in Arcane.
Oh.
Yeah.
Okay. That I vaguely remember that character. I don't know.
I don't know.
These are some deep pulls you're doing today.
I really liked that, like, tertiary character, because she seemed like she was really cool, so I remembered her. And also, she was in a critical role for, like, it wasn't a one-shot. Maybe it was a one-shot. I don't know, it was, like, an episode or two that she was there for, and she was really cool. I like that actor. She's neato.
Okay.
I forgot that I've seen all of the, like, I'm looking at the cast again. And it's a surprise every time because I don't remember anything about anyone.
Val is just going through the cast list and looking for every voice actor she recognizes. Okay. I think that's
there's only like 30 voice actors in Hollywood, though, so.
Yeah. They all connect and overlap. I'm going to digress pretty heavily here, but I'm playing through Persona 5 again. And Matt Mercer plays, what's his character's name? Yusuke. And.
Yeah, that guy.
All I can hear is Matt Mercer all the time. It's so funny because I feel like Matt Mercer usually does more of a voice, but I think this one is very neutral Matt Mercer. So I don't know. I just, all I hear is Matt Mercer.
my brother watches, what's it called? The anime that you like.
JoJo?
Yes, thank you. My brother watches that and yeah. Mercer was in one of the seasons. And I could not focus.
He was whenever the main character. He was Jotaro Kujo.
And like, whenever I would pass by, it would be so distracting to see these over-the-top characters on the screen and then have Mercer's voice come out. Like, my brain did not compute.
I don't really care about, like, subs versus dubs. You just listen to whatever you want, but like... Mm-hmm. I do feel like with JoJo, you gotta do the original Japanese. There's just something about it. Like, there's a flamboyancy to it that you just don't get in
English. It's just gayer. It's gayer originally.
I mean, kinda.
Well, okay.
I mean, it is a very homoerotic show in general.
Matt Mercer is also somewhat fluid. But I understand.
I mean, yeah.
He can be a very effeminate person.
See, there's a lot of roles. But anyways, Owl House. We're talking about, you know,
that's right.
This is what happens when we have something that we find difficult to talk about as we start talking about other things. You know, we're struggling when we start talking about other stuff.
Well, okay. Or
it means it was really good and we connected it to a lot of things. It's one of the two.
I prefer the second. Let's go with the second. It makes us seem nicer.
Okay. So why don't we, like, okay, we've trashed the third season. Mm-hmm. And we thought the epilogue was good, but, like, it was too rushed. But let's look at the show as a whole. And, like, do you think this is going to stand the test of time, I guess, is my question for you.
I think it will.
Okay. Do you think people, like, a decade from now are going to still talk about it? I guess, like, because I feel like people still talk about Avatar all the time for a show that, like, ended in, like, 2007 or something.
Well, okay. I feel like that's an unfair comparison because something about Avatar really kickstarted this whole era of cartoons.
Yeah.
I think it was pretty much the first cartoon that had a legitimate plot. Like, a lot of cartoons had, like, a plot happening, but follow-through was sporadic, and there were a lot of fillers for most other cartoons, whereas Avatar was conceptualized as a story.
Yeah, a lot of these, like, cartoons that I feel like, I don't know, I call them, like, YA cartoons. They're not quite YA, but, like, preteen cartoons. Like, they're not meant, they're, like, supposed to be a step up from, like, Looney Tunes.
Like, okay, we had, like, Cat Dog and Ed, and Eddy, right? Like, we had those cartoons. And, you know, they were fun. And they felt like they were appropriate for the ages I was, just as Avatar did. But there is something about having, like, that story that really made it feel timely, but also timeless. And Avatar was the first, so that's... I feel like... I honestly
was
believe...
Was it the first, though? I don't know if I think...
Well,
there was, like, Batman Beyond.
How many people do you know watch Batman Beyond?
Okay, I feel like that you're showing an age bias here because Batman Beyond was a pretty big deal.
It was amazing and it was excellent, but I feel like... It was Warner Brothers. Where did they show it here?
on Warner Brothers.
Okay.
I don't know. It was like a network. It was Channel 2. I don't know.
But like when I was a kid and we had all of these American cartoons show on the same channel, it was a pretty big deal. But okay. All of them, it was like a mix of all the channels. It was a mix of Boomerang, Nickelodeon, Disney, Cartoon Network, a lot of them, right? And
yeah.
So to me, the distinction wasn't there in the beginning. But then when I got to America and I started watching cartoons here in 2004, none of my school friends talked about Batman, right? They talked about SpongeBob and Samurai Jack and like Ren and Stimpy. Like Batman never made the conversation. So okay. At least from my experience, even though I remember it having a plot, it didn't leave enough of an impression where I knew how it ended. But I feel like Avatar was the one cartoon that was condensed. It was masterfully written. And from, I think it also had to do with the fact that from that cartoon, we got a lot of other cartoons following pretty quickly. You know what I mean? Like, we had a lot of cartoons follow Avatar's steps in becoming like this plot. And not all of them worked.
I do think you're right in that Avatar did set off. I think, okay, it did a few different things. I think one, it showed a lot of these companies that like such a show could be profitable to make, which is the most important thing, sadly. So I think that's important. And then two, I think it inspired a lot of creators. And I think that's what you're getting at, is that a lot of people saw, like, I think if you look at a lot of people who've produced animated series since Avatar, I mean, even if they don't directly cite it, the influence is clearly there. And mm-hmm. Owl House is one of those that, like, clearly was inspired by Avatar, just like She-Ra, just like Gravity Falls, I assume.
Yeah, and we also had Adventure Time.
Adventure Time.
And from that we got Steven Universe.
Which I never watched.
Me neither. I think I've seen I know it's like a big deal,
and I know it's really queer. I just have never watched it.
Yeah, it never captured my attention. But I'm excited when other people like it. I don't know.
Like, yes. Like I understand why people like, I don't know, it's just never been a priority to me to watch it.
Mm-hmm. But we had like Rebecca Sugar go from Adventure Time into this. I believe she worked with Alex Hirsch, and then he did Gravity Falls, if I'm not mistaken. I don't know, I feel like they collaborated on something. And then we have Stevenson, and he's collaborated with a lot of these creators too. And from that, we have Dana Terrace, who I believe worked on a bunch of these cartoons, right? So it feels like a club, like a little like insider group of creators that really feed off of each other, which I appreciate. And all of these cartoons have a very similar vibe.
Yeah.
But like, that's why I wouldn't compare it to Avatar. But I would compare it to all of the other shows, to Gravity Falls, She-Ra, Steven Universe, even though I'm not as familiar, Adventure Time. All of those have very, very, very similar vibes. And a lot of them are kind of isekai. Shout out to Chloe for her favorite word.
Yes.
I was really excited to say it.
Thank you. I mean, Owl House is definitely an isekai.
Adventure Time is kind of, because Finn is the only human.
But he doesn't travel from another world.
Yes, but it has an aspect of him like not knowing where he's from, right? Like the origin. And then like,
I don't think that really counts though. I'm not
Chloe,
gonna be that.
I'm bending the rules for a metaphor to work, okay?
Sounds like more like a misekai to me.
And then we have Steven, who's the only human surrounded by rocks.
I really have no idea about Steven Universe. Like, does he come from another world? Is it an isekai? I have no idea.
No, he's like the reincarnation of his mom and the son of his dad.
Okay.
It's real weird. Tumblr taught me a lot about it. I know so
the
much about...
The son of his dad. Okay.
He's the son of his dad and the reincarnation of his mom.
That's what a person is to their dad, yes.
And then, like... All of these cartoons have that, right? They have, like, the human surrounded by the not-humans. Even She-Ra.
Oh, yeah, that is true.
Adora is a first one.
I get, yeah.
So it's, like, all of these cartoons have that. It's basically the same as Orange is the New Black, right? We're the white woman coming into jail.
the prison isekai.
Exactly. Jesus Christ. To experience this new world around us.
This is going to... Oh, man. We're going to get someone angry about something, Val.
No, everyone is agreeing with my points exactly, Chloe.
Okay. Everyone's just sitting there nodding like, yes.
Yes, prison Val, is an isekai. You are right. Assassin's Creed is an isekai.
I'm okay. That's true.
We should have an episode where we just, it's just 2 hours where we list isekais that we know. No, okay. No anime though.
I mean, I don't watch, I watched JoJo. That's like the only one.
It sounds fake. I've heard that you've been watching more.
Like what?
Did you not discuss other anime on Discord? Am I misremembering? I don't remember anything.
We did have that weekend where I asked for a bunch of recommendations and tried to watch a bunch of stuff and then came away from it being like, a lot of this was fine. It's not really stuff I would ever seek out to watch.
How many shows did we watch? Do you remember? It was like 4 or 5?
I don't remember. It all blurred together. There was something about gems who were warriors. There was another thing about a guy who was becoming a traditional Japanese storyteller. And then there was another one.
There was one about sociopath.
Yes.
Like, sociopathic, like, games.
Yes.
And there was that.
There was one about a bar in the afterlife. Yeah. There was one
Is it called Utena, whatever?
I don't know.
The gay one?
The one Sarah likes. Legendary Girl Utena, I think.
Utena. Whatever, yeah. Which we watched that one too,
like,
right?
Yeah, but like it's just like mid-90s queer baiting for like episode after episode.
It was fun, but it was rough. It was like our Resident Evil marathon.
There was one that I actually liked, but I don't remember. It was something, it was like kind of more of a slice of life. I'm trying to see if I still have the list somewhere.
Didn't we watch a thing about like a guy who the first like 10 minutes of the anime was the camera zooming in on his empty apartment or something? And then it was very weird and dark all of a sudden, even though, yeah, I don't remember what we watched.
I don't remember. Oh, so there was a lot of stuff. I've got the names here now. But I don't remember which one is which, so it's not going to be helpful. And I'm not going to try and pronounce all these.
Yeah, we're not anime fans, is what we can get from this discussion.
I like anime, like, I like Final Fantasy, and I like Persona, and I like Fire Emblem. Like, I'm such a big fan of, like, anime-adjacent stuff. I'm looking at the Fire Emblem Engage Collector's Edition right now. Like, I'm a legit Fire Emblem fan. It's just, like, there's something about it where it's like when I'm not playing it as a game, where I just have to sit there and watch, and like I just can't do it.
Anime always feels very intense to me. I don't know what it is, but I feel like it's like sucking my soul out every time I watch it. Like it's so much effort, and it just might be the fact that I don't enjoy like the animation necessarily. For a lot of them, the like, you know what it is? I feel like a lot of my friends who watch anime really love the exaggerated emotions.
The, like, chibis and whatnot?
Not necessarily, but, like, whenever I was around people who were watching anime or, like, friends made me watch, like, an episode or two of something to see if I liked it, there was always a lot of emotional outbursts, whether they be happy or sad, that my little repressed, like, emotionally dead on the inside vessel could not connect to.
The anime grunting.
Oh my god. Yeah. Ugh. Ugh. And it's like, you know?
This is the one that I liked. March Comes In Like a Lion. It's about this guy who lives with his foster family and he's a professional shogi player.
That's the one I was talking about with the creepy man.
He's not great. The main character?
Yeah. He unsettled me the entire time. It's the one with the woman with the massive...
Yeah, well, that does not narrow down anything in anime.
Yes, but hers are, even by anime standards, kind of, like, huge.
Right, because anime... I don't... Jesus. Yeah, I know. Yep.
Yeah, that one creeped me out. Don't know why.
I liked it. It was very fun. There was that scene where, like, his friend starts eating his rice ball like a bird. And I actually, that was, like, probably one of the few times an anime has ever made me laugh.
I do not remember that. He very much looked like a dude who was, like, upset at women for not liking him, for being an incel. Friendly. Yep. I didn't want to say it, but yeah, you said it, so.
Okay. Anyway, so we're getting pretty far afield from Owl House. This is the last time.
No, this is part of Owl House, because Luz is also a huge fan of anime.
I mean, that's true. Isn't that canon?
Yeah.
Yeah, there was something about anime. I don't remember what. The mom says something about it, I think.
Well, the mom likes a lot of, like, Star Trek and stuff, but yes. Luz herself, like, likes anime, and I think a lot of, and, like, that book was also an anime Harry Potter-ish thing.
The Good Witch Azura?
Yeah.
Okay,
it what felt like Sailor Moon to me.
Do you think Luz likes?
I don't know anime. I just...
I mean, Sailor Moon?
I've never watched it. I honestly cannot tell you what it's about.
Even I like Sailor Moon, though. You gotta watch Sailor Moon.
And I've never watched Pokemon. I watched Yu-Gi-Oh! Because it was on in the morning before school.
Ugh. Okay.
Don't remember but what
Sailor,
Yu-Gi-Oh! Is about.
Sailor Moon is really good.
Just a lot of, like, deep blue backgrounds.
The heart of the cards, Yugi. The heart of the cards. Gotta play my Blue Eyes White Dragon and Summer Exodia, the Destroyer, or whatever his name is. God, someone is... Okay, I heard something, like, if you ever want to experience what being a ghost like, it's listening to a podcast where two people are talking about something that you know the answer to and you can't tell them. and it's like, that someone is sitting there listening to us right now just so deeply frustrated because they're just like... I know all this stuff, and they're misquoting it, and they don't know the names, and I'm so deeply frustrated by them, and they're never going to listen to us again, because we just had this butcher session about anime.
Look, I deeply understand that a lot of people really like anime, and I will honestly say I have tried to watch many, many, many anime, and I have never once really wanted to keep watching an anime.
I think JoJo was the only one for me because it recognized that it is fundamentally ridiculous.
For me, it was Steins Gate because I was on vacation.
Yeah.
But I watched Steins Gate like over the course of like 8 hours at night.
Yeah.
Right, either before or after a wedding of a cousin who's very close to my immediate family. So, like, I was heavily involved in the wedding. The circumstances in which I watched Steins Gate are so different from any other time I watched anything in my life that yeah. I don't know if I actually liked it or I was just in a new... In like a new place and a new situation with a lot of things happening, so it was a nice break.
Yeah.
So I don't know if I'll be able to watch it again. But I did like Steins Gate and I watched all of it, including the movie.
There are some shows that you watch once and you never have to experience again and you still can take something from it.
Yeah.
I think. And that's true for me with Disco Elysium, where it was just like I played through it once. I never have to play through this again, not because I didn't like it or not because it like didn't work, like it was brilliant, but like I feel like playing through it again, I don't need to do that. So I get it. Anyway, we've got like 5 minutes left. Owl House, any final thoughts? Let's say we're far in the future. You've got little Val Jr.
Oh.
Okay. Do you put on Owl House for Val? I don't know.
I have a nephew or a niece.
Okay, yes. You've got your niece.
You just gave me a crisis, Chloe.
I just gave Val a complex. She's going to talk about this with her therapist.
I don't have a therapist because I graduated therapy in college.
congratulations. I'm very proud of you, because coming to terms with your mental health can be a lot of work, as I have shown. But let's say you've got a niece and, you know, your sister just loves you so much that she names her Val Jr. And
I appreciate they want to watch something.
And they put on Owl House. And what are your thoughts at the time?
I will watch it so hard with a child 15 years in the future, 20, whatever. Yeah. How about you? Would you let Chloe Jr. watch? Would you watch with her?
I assume Chloe Jr. would be a cat, but let's be real. No, or if it's my brother, it would be Jason Jr. Because we both know, regardless of gender, he's naming his kid Jason Jr.
That is true.
But anyways,
lots of
shade at
animal onesies.
Shade at my brother aside. I think I would. I think, I don't know. It's just like I would probably put on Avatar and Korra first. She-Ra, but then we would make our way to Owl House.
What if you just like rank it from like least good to most good?
Okay.
Because I don't think there are bad ones. Can't think of a bad cartoon that we've mentioned other like in this episode.
Well, I think I just did rank it from least good to good. Or like I ranked it from like best to least, I guess, in that sense.
Owl House is pretty up there.
No, I mean, like, I definitely would do Owl House before I would do, I don't know. It's hard to say because most of the things I didn't finish, and I'm going to say something, and someone's going to get mad at me.
Okay, so this might be a little controversial.
Okay, but let's hear the controversy.
Honestly, I liked Owl House a lot more than I liked She-Ra.
Oh my god,
and wow. I really, really liked She-Ra, except for the third season, of course, of Owl House. But like, something about it and, like, the childlike glee that we get in a lot of episodes worked so much better for me than, like, child soldiers duking it out with, like, royalty. You know what I mean? Like, it was... Don't get me wrong. I love She-Ra. It's a good cartoon. I enjoyed it. We talk about a lot of cartoons, but... And I'm gonna keep saying this. I'm not a big cartoon person. Like, I just get bored of most animations.
Yeah.
And She-Ra is one of my favorite shows, like, ever. And I still think I like Owl House a little more.
Okay. I would definitely put She-Ra above Owl House.
Which is fair. It is...
Yeah.
It has a better plot. It has probably better writing. But I think I like the... So, it's probably, like, the writer in me. I really love the world building of Owl House a million times more than I do the world building in She-Ra.
Yeah.
And I think that's what it is, because every time I think of Owl House versus She-Ra, I'm thinking of all the character designs, of all the little, like, areas on the Titan. Like,
yeah.
So, everything that I really appreciate about Owl House has a lot to do with, like, the physical world and the locations and the way things work, whereas with She-Ra, I really appreciate the plot and the story. So I think I, as a person, value, like, the world building a little more than a lot of other things.
Yeah.
But I think a lot more people value plot over that. Are you, like, a plot or a background detail sort of person?
I like a plot.
Yeah, I figured.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I like a good plot. I can overlook a lot of scenes for a good plot. Also, one of my cats is now snoring, so
Which one? The old man or the teenager?
It's the old man.
It's the old man. Yeah, it is.
Okay.
You know what I was just thinking of in this second before we finish up?
Yeah, you should have 1 second.
We should do an episode on Mad Max, because for some reason this just reminded me of Mad Max, because it's all world building.
Okay.
That's
you
my
want to talk about Furiosa. That's what this is.
No, okay. I actually really like the, like, white-dressed women that escape.
Okay.
And the little bald dude.
We will do a Mad Max episode. Any last thoughts?
That was my last thought. I am all out of them. Brain cells vanished.
Brain cells depleted. She's going to go sleep for 300 years. I don't know why I said that. Thank you all so much for tuning in. Just one more time, I want to mention we have a Discord, links in the description, and I'm adding it to our website, and come hang out with us, I guess.
It's much easier to recommend stuff there.
Yeah, recommend stuff, badger us, tell us how big of idiots we are.
Hey, we're super smart, okay? Everyone appreciates all of this. They all agree with our opinions perfectly.
Okay, come be the super ego to our id and ego. to someone out there, that joke really was really funny.
What do we have?
What do we have? We've got a Twitter, an Instagram, and a Pinterest is at InMediaLez. Our subreddit is r/InMediaLez, and our website is InMediaLez.com. Oh, and I forgot, what do we have on Tumblr?
Well, we have a Tumblr on Tumblr.
We have a Tumblr on Tumblr. This is going great.
And it's called...
What a good episode.
And it's the pod... Oh, what was it?
The pod in Media Les.
Tumblr.com. Yep. You confused me, Chloe.
I bamboozled Val.
And now I'm just thinking if we actually have, like, people who are only following us on Pinterest, and I really want to get into the brain of those psychopaths.
If you guys are like Pinterest, we do get like a couple hundred views via Pinterest every month. I don't know if you knew this.
I did not. I see the traffic
statistics. So some people are coming from Pinterest.
Oh my god, like, that's really
shout
neat.
Out to you. Like, you're putting together your pins of like, here's my spring, you know, clothing themes. And then you're just like, oh, and Media Les, I'm going to go listen to that while I put together my board of like,
here's a mood summer, board for my D&D character.
Early summer, yeah, D&D mood board. And finally, our email address is inmedialez@gmail.com. Thank you to everyone who interacts with us in any way. We love you.
And we'll see you in the next one.
And Titan bless you. Is that in the background of yours?
Yeah, and my computer is wilding.
Okay, it sounded like a cow dying or something. Like, what's going on?
It is a cow dying, and the cow is my computer.